Does art have to have a message? That's a question we're not going to answer on the show today. But one thing's for certain. For many artists, taking a stand comes with the territory. I'm Emily Means, and today on In the Hive, we look at the convergence of art and activism. If you've ever been to Mestizo Coffee House on North Temple and about 7th West in Salt Lake City, you'll know that it's a space that fosters creativity. The coffee shop has a rotating gallery featuring art from local artists, and when I visited on Monday evening, I'm pretty sure drum circle practice was in session. But out of earshot of the drums, in the meeting room at the back of the building, 10 people sat chatting quietly over their laptops and notebooks at the Art and Activism Write-In, hosted by the 1 to 5 Club. The club is a program through the Utah Pride Center for sexually fluid people, including bisexual, pansexual, and asexual. And whenever there's a fifth Monday in the month, members of the group set aside a time and space to get creative with their peers. I asked 1 to 5 Club member Shauna Brock to explain what a write-in is.
It's not as interesting as it sounds. A write-in is basically a free space for people to come and get work done. It's born out of some of the ideas of the NaNoWriMo, like Novel Writing Month stuff in November, where they get writers out of their homes and get people together in a coffee shop and write for 3 hours or something. So the 1 to 5 Club does an art and activism thing every fifth Monday, and whenever that happens to be. We've done poetry workshops, we've done writing conversations, we've talked about querying, that kind of thing. And then tonight we decided it would just be nice to have a safe space where people could come bring their pipe cleaners and their glitter and their computers and work, and also be able to chat and be able to hang out and feel like their art was being done in a public space, but also a safe space. So,
why is it important to offer that to members of this group?
Safe spaces for people who are sexually fluid are paramount. Yet again, we're seeing conversations about the increased rates of domestic violence, the increased rates of rape, the increased, you know, situations of suicide and suicidal ideation. The fact that a safe space can exist where somebody isn't hiding away in their bedroom, typing furiously, hoping that no one sees their computer, or the only space that they have is at the break room at work, maybe. This just gives a space, and it's not enough of one, but it gives a space for someone to come and hang out and be like, I'm weird too, without any judgment. So,
well, I know you yourself are a writer. Do you use this medium to address different causes you're passionate about?
Yes, actually, I'm querying, self-plug here, no. I'm querying a novel right now that is specifically about two very fully realized bisexual adults living their lives. I mean, these kind of things are very important, and they're not shown. What you usually get are own voices stuff that shows up, like in YA, which is fantastic, but you see these kids who are coming out, who are having those issues. You don't really often see fully realized bisexual identity as adults, where they are. They don't need to come out. They don't need to have those, you know, the conversation with their family. They're just living their life. And that's important to see. So those are the kind of things that show up in a lot of my work.
What does writing about this cause in particular do for you and for the community?
Well, representation matters. And they say write what you know and write what you want to explore. And so I would like to, I personally like to see myself and my friends show up in my work because we exist. I think that's where the crux is right there, is representation matters. Whether you're the creator or putting yourself into the creation, all of that matters, and being out and being who you are while doing it. Because not every story gets to be written by a straight white male.
Caitlin has been to a few meetings with the 1 to 5 Club, and tonight she brought her sketchbook to the write-in to touch up her cartoons.
Okay, I'm Caitlin, and so I want to write a webcomic eventually. So a lot of what I try to focus my characters and writing about is LGBT issues and mental health issues, because I have, you know, a slew of mental health issues, and I have a lot of people in my circle that do as well. And I don't know, I just like to represent that and kind of talk about the struggle and symptoms and how to kind of cope with them, if that makes sense. When I make stories, I mean, I hope I am doing a good job at representation, you know, but I want to make a diverse type of world where a lot of different people coexist and show that's the norm. And that's how it really is in real life, you know. Queer people exist everywhere. You, like, people try to weed us out or whatever, but we are, like, you know, in the nooks, and people are like, oh, like, we have one gay friend in our entirely straight group or whatever. And I guess when I draw for the greater good, I'm trying to show people that, no, like, that's really not, like, common at all.
And Caleb brought his laptop to work on his novel.
For me personally, the reason why I started writing this project is because I have an extreme level of social dysfunction because I have a severe level of autism. And so I see the world in a way that's very different from other people. And as I've started becoming more social, I've been making the attempt to kind of figure out a way to bridge the gap and kind of explain the world in a way to normal people how I see it. So for this series, I'm going to be tackling some issues with sociology in terms of politics and also things with gender and also some social issues with like BDSM community, dominant submissive relationships and things of that nature. I think it's important to always create an ongoing social discourse. It's important to always create questions and encourage people to explore the gray areas in what they perceive to be the normal world.
Last year, local artists launched the Nopalera Artist Collective, a group whose work focuses on the experiences of migrants and people of color. 20 to 30 people regularly show up to their bi-monthly group art projects, and it's not just artists in attendance, but also people from the community who've never put paint to canvas before. I talked with Ella Mendoza, a painter, and Jorge Arellano, a stencil artist within the Nopalera Artist Collective. Ella described who the collective was for, the purpose it serves, and why the artist chose a prickly cactus as their symbol.
First of all, a nopalera or a nopal is a cactus as it grows on its own in the desert, but a nopalera is a group of cactuses that grows together in the desert, and their thorns intertwine, their fruits grow together. And when we were visualizing this collective, myself and Jorge and a few others, we just talked about what it means to survive in white supremacist spaces. What does it mean to survive in places that obviously do not want us? And yet here we are thriving despite of it. You know, here we are growing our fruits, blooming, and in a lot of ways taking care of one another. So Nopalera Artist Collective started because a group of undocumented and formerly undocumented migrant artists, people of color, we all got together and we just said, wow, Our art is really powerful on its own, but what if we got together, and what if, like the nopales, like the cactus in the desert, we grew together despite of our circumstances, you know, despite of the fact that we are getting attacked, our community, very often.
So in the past year or so, we've seen a surge in protests, more people becoming active in their communities. Was the collective created in response to anything in particular?
Yeah, so basically there's been a lot of different issues that it's been kind of like something that made us start this collective. It's not just one simple thing. Of course, with the new president and what's going on with all the comments against communities, different communities, and just the idea of this ridiculous wall they're trying to build and things like that, we just decided that, you know, it was enough. Like, we've been working on our own for so long. Like, every artist in this collective, they've been doing some type of activism on their own. And we were just thinking one day, why don't we just get together and start something to be represented, to be out there, to actually have a voice and have a face at the same time, you know? So we decided to get together and start this collective in response to not only this particular issue, but a lot of different issues that affect our community. And so far, it's been working so great, you know.
What are some of those issues specific to the community here in Utah?
Yeah, well, let's start with just because we're artists, we don't have that representation in the city. Like, we don't have these spaces, not the same opportunity. It's hard for us to get in any events, any art galleries or whatever like that. This is one of the reasons as an artist that you want to start doing something. But then you think about, like, why do I want to do this? Because all the things that are happening around, you know, the problem with the border. We're all immigrants, so we live here, and we represent this group of people that it's being mistreated. So some of the issues is pretty much everything we oppose, because the actual government right now, you know, it's been really direct against our community. So this is one of them, but also the border patrol, all the unfair treats between countries and things like that. I don't know, Ella, if you want to...
Yeah, and I just wanted to say, I think when people ask us, you know, what exactly you were responding to, I think what comes to mind is, you know, that chant that says, when our community is under attack, what do? We stand up and fight back. And I think that fighting back sometimes looks very differently. You know, of course, it looks like marching on the streets, which we do, but it also looks like taking over spaces, you know, making spaces our own, making our own safe spaces. And so a lot of the artists at Nopalera make pieces specifically about these issues, about migrant rights, about our struggles, but also about our triumphs, you know. We work with a lot of artists who come from all sorts of different backgrounds. You know, we're migrants from South America, migrants from Mexico, migrants from other continents. And so a lot of the folks that are in the collective, we genuinely, I think, yes, we talk about issues, but also like by creating this collective and by like working together, we're also like building something really beautiful, you know, because it's not always about like what you're fighting against. Sometimes it's about who you're fighting for.
So yeah, you're talking about creating a space and just like thinking about the types of art that you two create. Jorge, you're a stencil artist. So that maybe looks like graffiti in public spaces.
Yeah. So, you know, when we said that we are looking for creating spaces, that doesn't have to be inside or outside, you know. It really involves every space in the city. It comes from a gallery to a wall on the street. Of course, when it's on the street, it's more temporary, but it's not like something you want to create to be there forever. It's something you want to create to go along with whatever you believe and whatever you're doing. So in this case, when we're doing protests and things like that, because a lot of the members in the collective, we've been activists for several years. So every time we go out there and protest and take these spaces, we want to bring our art to show what we're talking about. I think without art, there is not really a lot of what you're trying to say, you know.
Do you think art helps people understand the message that you're trying to get across?
I think it definitely makes it easier, you know. A lot of us are very visual. We're very, we listen, people listen with their senses more than they realize. And so when you use art as a weapon, as something that just takes you straight to the point, that's something really powerful. And as artists, as cultural workers, as folks that, you know, have gone through the things that we did, when we make art, it is a representation of not just our soul, but of our struggle and of our resistance. And like I said, of our victories.
Do you think, just looking to the future of the Nopalera Artist Collective, what comes next? Big group art projects, art on the street? What do you have in mind?
Well, that's definitely some of the dreams that we have as a collective. Even before the collective, you know, we always dream about creating something big, something that it's gonna really bring people's attention. So we don't know the future of the collective. We all know that it's gonna be good things coming for us. And I think we're gonna work pretty hard to achieve things like that. And hopefully it won't take very long. I think we started really strong and really well organized as a collective. For the little time that we've been out there, it's just been good news since day one. So I really, really think that I see something like that happening, and hopefully soon.
Yeah, stay tuned. We're going to take over your streets, take over your walls. Watch out, Salt Lake City, Nopalera Artist Collective here. And it's not even about the collective. It's, you know, we here, our people are here. Estamos aquí, you know? So watch out, Salt Lake, because these artists are rising.
That was Ella Mendoza and Jorge Arellano from the Nopalera Artist Collective. Art can serve many purposes for its consumers. I mean, I have a playlist for everything, for washing dishes, for working out, for rainy days. But sometimes when times are tough, it can be difficult to appreciate the art around us. And the easy thing to do is turn off the music. But for some artists, especially those geared towards social justice, setting their work aside isn't an option. I'm here with Jorge Rojas, an artist and also the Director of Education and Engagement at the Utah Museum of Fine Arts. Jorge, thank you so much for joining me. This week I'm talking about art and activism. It's kind of the theme of the show. But sometimes when I'm putting a show together, art and culture shows can seem like, you know, my fun show for the week or whatever, with local issues such as homelessness or a lack of affordable housing or public lands. It can sometimes seem like a distraction to focus on art. I wonder if some artists might feel that way too. And I also am hoping you can tell us why it's important to continue to make art or focus on art in difficult times.
I think that in the history of social movements, the arts have often been used to, you know, sort of spark our radical imagination, right? So it's this idea of our ability to envision things not as they are, but as they could be. And for those of us that are artists and that are involved in sort of in this resistance or thinking about social justice issues, it's not really a distraction, right? It's like for us, it's like everyday work. In fact, it can be exhausting, and which is, I think, part of the problem. I think as we have this very kind of reactionary presidential cabinet right now that is just we're just constantly, it feels like we're constantly being hit with injustices that we have to sort of react to. So I think part of the challenge is like, how do we take care of ourselves? How do we take care of our art? How do we take care of each other and our communities while still being in it for the long haul? Because it requires a long haul to make any real change.
Through art?
Absolutely, through art and through activism.
That kind of makes me think of protesting at the NFL, right? We had NFL players this past year kneeling during the national anthem, kind of showing solidarity with Black Lives Matter. And I feel like a response to that was, you know, can't football just entertain me kind of thing. But I guess that could also be applied to art. Can't art just be entertaining? Does it have to have this, you know, this political message or social message?
It can absolutely just be something that's, you know, visually pleasing. Absolutely. In fact, I think beauty and aesthetics and when we talk about just, you know, kind of like awe-inspiring art, it is extremely important. So yes, art can be that. At the same time, there's all kinds of art, right? And so I think there are some of us who are interested in using our creativity to get messages out there that are inspiring people to question the status quo and to reflect upon some of the injustices that occur in our lives and, you know, inspiring folks that way. So, yeah, it can serve many purposes. It doesn't have to be one or the other. And I don't think it'd be a shame if every artist was doing art around social justice, because I think, you know, beauty is very important as well.
So you're part of this new group, Utah Network for Arts and Social Justice. We talked about it a little bit, but maybe you can further define the relationship between art and social justice. Is art born out of injustice?
In some cases, yes, but not always, again. So the Utah Network for Arts and Social Justice supports and catalyzes those that are committed to advancing more equitable communities through the arts. This is a brand new organization. It was really born out of the University of Utah's Office of Equity and Diversity, but now it's really becoming a statewide effort. And, you know, we realize that there's already a lot of social justice efforts that are taking place in the states, and we definitely don't want to try to, like, duplicate what's out there. We really wanted to shine a spotlight on these efforts and highlight them, catalyze them. And I just want to, like, clarify, when we talk about the arts, we're speaking, like, really broadly. So not just, like, the fine arts and, you know, like you would see in a museum, but all forms of cultural expression. So ancient forms of storytelling, crafts, hip-hop, digital media, you know, all forms of creative expression. And when we speak about social justice, we're speaking of really trying to dismantle all the different kind of intersecting forms of oppression in our societies, like racism and colonialism and sexism, ableism, classism, all of that. And so we really felt that there was there was room for an organization that would sort of help bring all of these kind of scattered efforts together through the arts.
Not everyone's cause is the same cause. Is it easier to unify people through art if they have these different causes? You know what I mean? Ableism, classism, I don't know. It could be LGBTQ issues.
Bringing them together within their own ideologies or with people of different ideologies?
Yeah, well, it seems like this is a network for anyone who's interested in expressing their cause through art, but not all of the causes align. So does art bring all of them together?
No, that's a great question, and that kind of remains to be seen, to be honest. In our initial meeting that we had people from sort of all aspects of the community, from from the state, from the city, from museums, from activist groups, students, faculty, all coming together. And, some people are more of the idea. Let me put it this way. There's some people that have been oppressed for a really long time. And I've noticed that those folks, which I consider myself part of that group, are a little bit less likely to want to go and kind of like sit across the table from someone that's been the oppressor and seeing if we can like talk it out. Though I think that's sort of like the hope everyone feels like,
right.
Can we just all come together and get
can
along?
We just get along.
And,
right.
I think we have to be sensitive to the fact that many people, like the Native American people and African Americans and Latinos and, people that have been treated unjustly for a really long time. So I think there's a school of activism out there that says, no, I'm not really interested in meeting you halfway. Because that hasn't worked for me. It hasn't worked for me and for generations of my people and my communities. That's not to say, like, I know there's other people that believe that is the only way. It's just to come together and have conversations. So back to your question, I do believe that art has this really kind of amazing way of creating kind of a neutral space, if you will, a safe space perhaps, where people can think about different ideas. But maybe it's not always about sitting across the table and trying to reach an agreement. Maybe it's about watching a performance or watching a concert or going to an art exhibition or seeing a film or, you know what I mean? I think that art does have a way of opening our minds to other ways of thinking about issues. So yes, I think it has that potential, but I'm always hesitant to just be like, yeah, let's all just get together and figure this out, because it's not quite that simple.
Nothing is, right?
Right.
Well, this week I talked with members of the Nopalera Artists Collective, which is a group of artists of color, kind of with a focus on immigration. Have you noticed an increase in local protest art recently? I feel like a lot of people have been moved since the 2016 election to at least participate more in their communities. I don't know if you've noticed something like that.
I do, and I have, yes. So I'm originally from Mexico, but I went to school here and then left for a long time. I was in New York City for several years and then came back. And I've been very impressed with sort of the level of activism and engagement and protest, whether it be about the environment or native lands or issues of like police brutality or Black Lives Matters. I mean, there's so many things that I do feel that there is a lot more activism in Salt Lake. In fact, I would almost brave to say that per capita, there's about as much activism here in Salt Lake as there is in a lot of other cities, in a lot of major cities. So, and yes, art is a part of that. I think whether it's like people doing like spontaneous dance pieces, in front of the Capitol, which I've witnessed, or just very creative like sign making, or, I did a performance piece here at the Salt Lake City Public Library called Hands Up, Don't Shoot, about police brutality, where, we had a great turnout and people coming out without even like knowing about the event and coming and just participating. So, yeah, I think there's a lot more movement, a lot more action, a lot more art being utilized to promote these ideas. But I think there could be a lot more. And I think that Salt Lake has great, great potential for people to organize more and utilize art as a tool to get our messages out.
Can anyone participate in this? Or should anyone participate in this? Or should it be led by people who are creatively minded?
I mean, I think anyone can participate. And I think like anything, like you don't want to go out and be in charge of a protest if you don't know what you're talking about, right? Like, you know, do your research, look into the organizations that you're supporting, look into their causes, look into their missions and the efforts that they're supporting. But yeah, I mean, I think there's like all kinds of entry levels, right? Like there's just like at a protest, there's the people that are like, you know, with the megaphone, you know, yelling out the chants. And then there's people that are just observing. And then in between, there's everybody else, right? So I think there's a lot of opportunities to participate. I've been bringing my kids to protest since they were babies. And so for them, it's like they, you know, they see it as something that is just part of their life. And so I think it's important for us to think about how we activate our own families and communities and friends and support each other. And yeah, and art is always a fun way, you know, whether you're knitting a hat or whether you're, you know, coming up with some clever meme to, you know, to share on social media or whatever. I think it's all good. But I think it's important to, there's some like real warriors out there, right, that are like doing this work all the time. There's some people that are like weekend warriors, and there's some people that are like once a year warriors. And I think for the people that are like all the time warriors, I think it's really important to really think about, like I said earlier, about the long haul and about pacing ourselves and taking care of ourselves, taking care of each other, making sure that we're emotionally healthy and physically healthy, and that we're ready to do this work for a long time. I mean, you know, we're just starting the second year of the current president. And, you know, I think a lot of people already feel like we've been beat up. And so, you know, I think it's, I just always want to kind of push that idea of like, okay, this is, it does, one march isn't going to change anything by itself. And so let's think about the long-term strategies. So I'm also an educator, right? And so I teach art history, and I also work at the museum, at the Utah Museum of Fine Arts, where, you know, education is this hugely important thing. And I just want to say that I honestly believe that the most powerful tools that I've seen are teaching art history, and also the humanities as a way to empower young people. And individuals, anyone really, to really kind of discover and develop their own voice, their own identity, their creativity, and also cultural pride, right? Because right now with the current administration, it's like, you know, Trump is really kind of trying to like get rid of that. You know, it's like get rid of any like outsider, in quotes. And so I just want to say that I think that embracing the arts and the humanities are like very important tools in our society to really develop our voices as human beings, because that's what it comes down to. It's like the arts, what they do is they celebrate our humanity. They celebrate our what makes us amazing, what makes, you know, our creativity and our imaginations. And it's really important. It's not just about like carrying a sign. It's about being educated in how through history, like human creativity has always been a tool for progress and for resistance.
That's Jorge Rojas from the Utah Museum of Fine Arts. Do you have a favorite piece of art here locally? Tell us about it at KCPW's Facebook page, KCPW88.3, or feel free to email us at comments@kcpw.org with your feedback and questions. Thanks to the KCPW team for their support of this show, as well as to Andrew Shaw, who produced the show's theme music. And thank you for tuning in. You can find podcasts of In the Hive at kcpw.org. Up next is Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Emily Means. Thanks for listening.